Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 7th of Tishrei. Today we're going to study the Tzitz Eliezer on saying Kaddish for someone who has disappeared. This is from the third volume of Tzitz Eliezer, Simon Gimel, third responsum. And he's talking about, he's responding to a certain Rav. This rabbi had sent him an essay of his about how to decide the dates of death of people who had disappeared during the Shoah, during the Holocaust. This is from the 7th of Tishrei of Tufshin Chet of 1947. So this is soon after the Holocaust, and it's a reminder of how long the trauma of the Holocaust continued. Not only psychologically, which is one terrible element of it, but also the halachic ramifications. So we've mentioned some of those in other occasions, such as the question of agunot, of women whose husbands had disappeared, and we didn't know for sure that they had passed away. And that lasted a long time. And Rabbanim spent much of their time and efforts on trying to help such women verify either that their husband was alive and they could reunite, or that their husbands had passed away and they could try to begin to the process of rebuilding lives. Here the question is, what can we do about creating a yard site? About when do we establish the date of a yard site for people who have passed away? One option was to say that the yard site should be whenever that town or that city's, you know, ghetto was liquidated or taken apart, because that's the time when we know that most of the people in that town had passed away. And they care about this, they're saying Kaddish on the yard site, on the day that, on the anniversary of the death, they want a date. So he was asked if they can make that, and the problem or the challenge was that in some of these situations, there's a woman, a wife, who has been left behind, who's probably a widow, but we don't know it for sure yet. And the question became, there is a question, halacha, if we establish a yard site or a date of death, or we start saying Kaddish, then are we implying that we are certain the person has passed away, and that certainty that the person has passed away might lead us to think that she is already permitted to remarry, even though we haven't yet verified it to the halachic standards that are required to let a woman remarry. Because remember, the halachic stakes in saying kaddish for somebody who hasn't really passed away are relatively low. You'll have said, well, I've said a prayer. The prayer is a good prayer to say anyway, right? The tradition, the custom of Kaddish arose somewhat independently of people reciting it for the purposes of commemorating the dead. It's really part of davening and part of the Jewish people declaring Hashem's greatness as part of their davening. It later became very connected to the rituals of mourning and of marking the passing of people who have passed away, which is fine, but the halakhic ramifications of somebody saying it when it really shouldn't be said are much lower than if, God forbid, a woman honestly thinks that her husband has passed away, gets remarried, and then it turns out she's been having an adulterous affair the whole time, halakhically, not in her experience of it, but halakhically. So that's the question. So this man, this Rav, who was writing to the Tzitz Eliezer, is responding to him with his own thoughts and his own reactions. So he says, this man brought a Beis Yosef in the tour in Yerodea, who had quoted an Itter. The Baal Itter was an earlier Ashkenazic authority who was well-respected, and the Itter had said, had quoted a Tshuvas HaRif, responsible of the Rif, who was even an earlier authority. The Rif is one of the earliest works of halacha that we have, and it's from around the late 10th, early 11th century in the non-Jewish counting. The Rif was widely authoritative because he took the Gemara and he removed most of the long discussions and the long digressions, and he just gave you halacha. So somebody could learn the Rif through, it was a much shorter way to go through Shas and learn much of halacha. And in responsum, the Rif had said, and this is the classic example of when somebody disappears and we're not sure that they've passed away, even though we're fairly confident they've passed away. In other words, we're not halachically sure, but we're intuitively sure. And the situation is what's called a person who's tava b'mayim she'en lahem sof. So, person's tavash mayim she'en lahem sof means somebody drowned in water that has no visible boundaries, right? There's no end to this water. Let's say, you know, the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Somebody, God forbid, goes overboard, and we search for them for days and weeks. So halachically, we're not yet allowed to assume that they've passed away, even though, again, intellectually, we're fairly confident that's true. Halachically, we're not allowed to assume that it's true, because the worry was, if it's Mayim She'en Lahem Sof, maybe they were carried away in some way beyond our ability to find them, and then they came out alive, and it turns out they're alive, and they haven't yet made it back to let us know that they're alive. That's the halakhic worry. It creates many problems and many concerns, and Rabbanim work hard on it in these situations, but that is the halakha as passed in the Gemara. It would be something like, you know, recently there have been airlines, there have been planes that have gone down and have not been found. So are you confident the people in the plane have probably passed away because the plane almost definitely went down? I mean, the plane disappeared, and like Malaysia 370, and the plane went down, and we're pretty sure that it sadly crashed and everybody on it died, and that's what, but we don't know, and we haven't found it yet. So that's the situation of Mayim Shaila himself, and there we don't allow the woman to get remarried until we find, and it's a terrible tragedy, but until we find proof that the husband has passed away, we have a problem. So therefore, the Rif said, it makes sense also that we don't act as avelim either. Meaning, when a person disappears, there's the wife's emotional tragedy. She's lost her husband. There's her concern about remarriage, about rebuilding her life at some point in the future, and that's a challenge. But then there might be other family members who also want a chance to mourn their deceased relative. The Rif says in this tshuva, that the Yitzhak quote, the quote that we get, and then got in the Beis Yosef, that we don't do that. We don't have the avelus either. We don't have the mourning either, because by virtue of this wife being around and us saying to the wife, you know, we can't be sure that he's passed away, and that's why we can't say you can remarry, we can't say you're a widow, so we can't then, that means we're establishing a halachic assumption of bechezkas chai, that he is halachically alive, and since he's halachically alive, we can't mourn him. That's what the Rif says. Now, there's a braita in Eva Rabati that had said, Tava binahar, oshenafal bayam. You know, somebody drowned in a river or fell into a sea, you count from Mishinit Yashu Levakesh, from when they've despaired of finding him. So that sounds like, no, as soon as we've given up, we have the right to assume that the person has passed away, and we can then mourn for him. So the Iter says, the Beis Yosef says, one of them says, that there we can say that when they fell in, we know they died. We saw them die and fall in, we just didn't find the body, right? Or they fell into Mayim Sheyesh Lahem, so if they fell into a body of river that's limited, meaning we can see the ends of it. The reason why that's important is because then if the person came out, we would see that the person had come out. The problem with Mayim Sheyesh Lahem, so is that we're worried that in some way this person was carried far away, and being carried far away, they went out of our lines of sight, so we can't see them. They might be alive somewhere we can't know about it. But in Mayim Sheyesh Lahem, so if in water that has clear delimitations, clear borders, then if they got out of the water, we would have seen it, we would have known about it, and therefore there, if they don't come out after within the time that people can't survive underwater, we can assume that, sadly, they've passed away. It seems like, unless the wife, the widow probably, is able to get remarried, we're not allowed to mourn. That's one way of looking. And that would mean that all the women, all the men who would disappear during the Holocaust, and their wives had not yet been allowed to remarry because the rabbanim involved, the rabbis who were trying their best to help them find their way to remarriage, had not yet found such room to allow them to remarry, in all those situations, it would seem that their families also cannot mourn them yet because we're worried about the connection being drawn. In other words, we're worried that if people know that so-and-so was mourned by his family and kaddish was said for him, they will say, oh, so the wife can remarry too. It's got to be. So that's the first assumption. The Rav Tzidkiah says, I don't think that you've proved that point. Ein hochacha. To my mind, there's no proof here that there's a prohibition to mourn, because the Itzer just wrote that since the person's got a chezkat chai, since we're establishing that we are assuming they might be alive, and they've always been alive until now as far as we know, it makes sense. So it makes sense is not the same thing as prohibited, as required. It makes sense that we don't act with avelus. We don't conduct ourselves with avelus. And he's coming to say that we shouldn't say that there's an obligation of us. We might have thought that since the person's probably dead and we've given up on looking for them, we don't think we're going to find them anymore. So therefore, you might have thought there's an obligation of Avelus. And the Tzitzit are saying, all the Yitzhak came along to say was there's no obligation of Avelus because there's this wife who we're worried about and there's a Cheskas Chai. But maybe if you wanted to, if the family says, no, we know that there's a chezkas chai, that the person has to be treated halachically as if they might be alive, and that's why the wife isn't going to be able to remarry. And nonetheless, we want to have avelus, maybe you could say that there's no iser. The iter didn't talk about a gzeira, the asur avelus. Didn't talk about there being a decree to say that you can't have avelus because maybe you'll come to allow the wife to the widow to remarry. He just said, since it's a cheskas chai, you don't have to do avelus. That's one way to read the iter, is what the tzitzizer is saying. So then, but the iter doesn't need to raise that evil rabati. So the evil rabati says is, because in evil rabati it said, me'imatai monidlo. When do you count the days of avelus for this person? And that sounds like there's an actual obligation. So one way to read that iter, the tzitzizer is saying, is that the iter sounds like he's wondering whether there's an obligation of avilut, an obligation of mourning that starts when we've despaired of finding the body of the person who we are pretty sure has passed away. And what his answer was that since there's a widow who is not yet being allowed to remarry because we're not sure that he's passed away, that the Rebbe to the Ezra is reading it, that means that there's no obligation of mourning. But it doesn't yet say that there's a prohibition of mourning. That's his first reading of it. We're going to come to less extreme or less disjunctive readings that separate less between her situation and the mourning situation in a second. But that's his current suggestion. The theater doesn't prove in any way that that you can't mourn. It only shows that you don't have to mourn. That's his current suggestion. Then he says the Beis Yosef also said it that way, and that's why he thinks, the other thinks, that if you look at Shulchan Aruch, he never mentions a prohibition of avelut al mishatava b'mayim shein lahem sof, about somebody who drowned in water that goes on beyond our sight lines. He never talks about, beyond our ability to see the ends of it, he never talks about a prohibition of avelut. All he says is in Yeridei Shin Ayin Hey, paragraph 7, is that the Shulchan Aruch says if somebody drowned in mayim shein lahem sof, you count the avelus from Mishini Yashu Milavaksho, from when they've despaired of finding him, of looking for him. So he says, and you hear from that, but mayim shein lahem sof, it sounds like there's no obligation. But if he wants to, there's also no prohibition. Because if it was prohibited, he feels confident the Shulchan Aruch would have told us it was prohibited. Now, all that would be true, he says, in the Itzer of the Beis Yosef. So if all I had, the only evidence I had was the Itzer of the Beis Yosef, I could have inferred that if one wanted to mourn somebody who passed away, even though there's a woman who's not going to be able to remarry, but if the family says, and let's say she even agrees, that, but it'll be productive and helpful for them, and consoling to them, to have time to mourn their deceased relative, maybe you would have said that you can do that, and it won't have us affect our vision, our view of this woman until we find better proof. That would have been true for the Itzer and the Beis Yosef. But the Tanz in the Sifkat and Gimel and the Shach in Sifkat and Zayin both wrote that you shouldn't have avelus in this situation, and it sounds like they think it's prohibited. In other words, it seems to me, this is Gideon Rothstein speaking, if I was sitting in front of the Tzitzit Ezra, I would ask him about this. It seems to me that that means that the Taz and the Shach understood the Beis Yosef and the Itzer differently than the Tzitzit Ezra did. But be that as it may, the Shach at least explicitly says it, and so the Taz implies that there's a prohibition that you're not allowed, you shouldn't do it. And the Ramayan Evan Ezer also says that we should object to women, that they should not say eulogies for men. Right? In times gone by, women were the mekononot and they were maspidot. They were more skilled or more trained at eulogizing people in such a way that would arouse the proper mourning and sadness in those listening. So the Rama says, but they shouldn't do it if we don't know the person has passed away. We're just doing it by umdenot hamokichot. If we just have enough evidence, enough circumstantial evidence, that almost all of us would agree that the likelihood is this person is no longer with us, that's not good enough, the Rama says, to allow eulogies until we know the person has passed away. And a woman also shouldn't eulogize her husband and shouldn't wear black, right, the color of a mourning widow, for as long as there isn't enough testimony that would be sufficient for a Beit Din, for a Rav, to say that yes, she was allowed to remarry, that we have enough confidence that the husband has passed away. So you see, the Rama seems to imply it, and the Shach says it explicitly, and the Taz seems to agree that there is actually a prohibition. And that prohibition will be a gzeira. It will be a protective ordinance because we're worried about the connection people will draw between seeing acts of mourning and assuming that the wife is allowed, the widow is allowed to remarry. If I see people mourning a person who's passed away, I assume that means he's dead. If he's dead, then the wife is allowed, that the woman who was his wife is now considered his widow and should be allowed to remarry, and that's what we're worried about. So this gets to the whole question of what do we protect against and what don't we protect against, and how do we decide what we protect against, and that's a broader topic. But in this situation, there's an understanding that these authorities saw it over here. In the Taz, happens to be that it seems to be, as the person writing to the Taz is responding to his essay, had said, the Taz, earlier in that same chapter, so when people contradict themselves in the same chapter, you certainly think there's an issue because people don't generally forget so quickly. And Sifkat and Bet, in the second comment he made in that chapter of Shulchan Aruch, he had quoted a case of a certain Jew who was killed and thrown into the Rhine River. And then on Asar B'Teves, it happened on Asar B'Teves, and then until Adar, his son was still looking for him. And then just before Adar, so Tevet, Shvat, right, a month and a half, almost 2 months, right, just at the end of Shvat, so 6 weeks. The son is looking for his father's body because he wants to bury him and then mourn him properly. Doesn't find the body, finally says, all right, I have to give up. I have to decide the body's not there. And Rav Yaakov, who was the Rav at the time, ruled that from that point on, they should keep Shiva in Shloshim. And then after the mourning, they kept Shiva. Then they found the body. So this Rav said to them, so what you do is, you just tear Kriya. And now it says here, Rishkimim Ramban. So I'm not sure who, this is the Ramban that we all know. It sounds like it, but I don't know who the Rav Yaakov would be then. But in any case, whatever the case was in China, I don't know why the Ramban would be mixing in a case in Germany. But so it might be a different Ramban, I'm just not sure who. But in any case, the key is that it sounds like the Taz is saying, even though you didn't find the body, you're allowed to mourn. And the Taz was one of the ones who we just said, it's not true. So the man who had written the essay to which the Tzedezer is responding it argue that maybe the Taz is distinguishing between a case when there is a wife or not a wife. That if there's no wife involved, then we allow people to mourn whenever they decide that their relative has passed away sufficiently such that they feel they're confident enough they want to mourn. So if there's only sons involved, that's what the case was in the earlier case. But when there's a wife involved, so then we have to be more careful because we're worried about the conclusions people will draw from witnessing the Avilut. The Tzitzit says he's not going to disagree actually the halacha about that situation. That's going to be an important distinction in terms of our practices of Avilut, of mourning over people who have disappeared. But in this particular situation, he points out that the case of the Rhine, of the person thrown in the Rhine, the Taz had said the case was where the man was clearly dead. How do we know? Because you have to read carefully in these situations. Sometimes we just think people are talking colloquially, but they're not. The case to this was, who a certain Jew who they killed, and they threw him in the Rhine. Now, if you read that casually, you might think what it meant was, they threw him in the Rhine, and that's what killed him. But it says, no, that would create a contradiction in the Taz. And then you have to say, maybe the Taz holds that it's different when there's a wife or not a wife. But it says, you don't have to go that far in our situation, because it could easily just be that the Taz is talking about, they killed him, and then to dispose of the body, they threw it in the Rhine. And if you read the words, that's what it says. And then the question was, even though we know he's dead, so you might think, since we know he's dead, maybe you have to keep Avelos right away. You have to keep Shiva and Shloshim right away. What gives you the right to pause and wait Shiva and Shloshim for somebody who's passed away? And the answer is that as long as we hope and think we're going to be able to bring this person to a proper burial, then the relatives are not required to be avelim yet, are not required to be mourning yet. They're in some sense onanim, right? They're in some sense involved in trying to attempt to bury the deceased relative. That would get into questions of, and this comes up in halacha in other contexts as well, of what sense are they onanim, right? We generally say in the ordinary case where somebody, let's just make it the best possible case, somebody lives a long and happy life, they're 110, 120, and they pass away. We have the body, and all we have to do is bring it to burial. So the close relatives are onanim until we bring it to burial because they're involved in making sure. They're halakhically required to be stopping the rest of their lives to make sure they bring this person to proper burial. In this tragedy that the Taz is quoting of a man who'd been killed and thrown in the Rhine. So the sons are trying to bring their father to burial, so they're searching for their father. It would be an interesting halakhic question as to what extent they're considered oninim, and they can set aside other halakhic responsibilities in the search for their father's body. Interesting and complicated halakhic question that we hope never arises, because we hope these kinds of situations don't arise again. In our situation, the Tzitzit are saying that's what the Taz was concerned and talking about, was when are they required to keep avelus if there's no body, but they know there's a death. And the answer was, as long as they're looking for the body, they're not required to sit Shiva yet. And then, so that's what this Rav Yaakov said. And then when they found the body, you might have thought, well, now that there's a body, they're going to bury it. Maybe they have to sit something again or do something in terms of mourning again, because now the person's been buried. And the answer was, no, you just tear Kriya. You tear Kriya because at any time when you've got the renewed emotions of sadness and loss over the death of a person, that's when you would tear Kriya, and that's when you would tear your clothing, and that's what you do. This man had also found a note of Yehuda. The note of Yehuda said that it's clear that when the person didn't have a wife, the person who has disappeared, didn't have a wife, you can start the avelus right away. So this man who was writing, it said that that's probably like, that he thought that's the general consensus. The Mechaber in Yoredeh thinks that way, he thinks. There's a Mechaber in Yoredeh who says that if somebody says, we saw your relative, a Gosis, 3 days ago, you have to mourn. So a Gosis is somebody who is on their deathbed. The exact definition is not simple to make, but it's somebody who is clearly in the process of dying. So I can't say more about it because I can't define it better. I happen to have recently known somebody who was a Gosis, and there's a, in some situations, there's a clear, it seems to me, there can be a clear experience of Gisisa, of where the person is clearly on their way to their death, and there's nothing that's going to be done about it. But anyway, so if somebody said, I was somewhere 3 days ago and I saw your relative so-and-so who's a Gosis, person has to be something about it. You know, God forbid, I saw your brother, I saw your sister, she was a Goseset, and it was 3 days ago. So in those times, you had to assume the person had passed away. So this man who was reading, who's writing the essay of the Note of Yehuda is replying to, it said, if that's true, if the Note of Yehuda is right, that it's a question of whether or not there's a wife, then how come the Shach asked whatever the man raised the shock, and really says, I don't even understand the question. The Tzitzit Eliezer says, I don't even understand the question. Why would the Note of Yehuda be required to follow the shock? They're both Achronim, they're both great Torah scholars. The shock held this way, the Note of Yehuda held another way. That's not a question from one to the other. So that's what the Note of Yehuda held. Chasam Sofer in Yeredeah also, he said, the Tzitzit Eliezer says, also brought up all these issues. And he quotes a Shtus Yaakov, who held that if there's no wife that we are beside the Shachat said had not seemed to say that, but Shus Yaakov and the Nevi Yehuda and the Chacham Tzvi, said, you know, in general in the Torah we follow the Rov. So if in most situations the person has passed away, that should be good enough to allow us to have avelus for the person. And the only worry is if there's a wife around. So you have basically two camps of Achronim, although the majority camp seems to be the one that says that if there's no wife, we would be able to be mitzabel whenever we want to. We could establish a date as soon as we are mit ya'esh, as soon as we've despaired of finding the person and bringing them to the better burial and the better. And as soon as that happens, we would have the ability to mitzabel. And the only worry is when there's a wife, and that's when we worry about it, and that's why we wouldn't do it, for the worry that people would assume that from there you're going to draw the conclusion that she's allowed to remarry. Then it's something that's not common for him, because he has enormous respect for the Aruch HaShulchan. As I think I've pointed out other times, he had, when his father had passed away, he wrote a book in his memory, a small book that he included to the Ezra in his memory, about the halachos of visiting the ill. And then when his mother passed away a few years later, he wrote a small book, again in her memory, about mourning issues. And, well, the other way around. And one was about visiting the sick, and one was about mourning the dead. And in each case, he followed the order of the Aruch HaShulchan, and he commented on issues in the Aruch HaShulchan. So he has enormous respect for the Aruch HaShulchan. But here, the Aruch HaShulchan said that if, in the situation of Gosis, right, somebody comes to you and says, 3 days ago, I saw your sister, she was a Gosis, and I saw your brother, I saw your whatever it was, and you're 3 days away, and in those days, there's not easy communication, so you sit Shiva. Because you can assume that 3 days later, after being a ghost state, the person has passed away. But then he also paskins that you shouldn't say Kaddish because you're worried that you're going to lead to the widow remarrying. So this is, I don't understand. If you're not going to allow saying Kaddish, then you shouldn't allow it to be mit'abel as well. You shouldn't allow mourning as well, because it's in the sources we have talk about the worry of her remarrying or thinking she's allowed to remarry. Or other people think she's allowed to remarry based on the seeing the practices of mourning, talk about practices of mourning, they talk about Kaddish. So why would the Aruch HaShulchan say you can't say Kaddish and yet allow mourning? And in fact, there's another Aruch HaShulchan who says specifically that you don't allow mourning in other situations because you're worried about the woman getting remarried. So I don't understand the Aruch HaShulchan. But the fundamental thrust of all the sources, the fundamental point of all the sources that he's saying is that the majority opinion seems to be that there's no particular prohibition to say Kaddish, especially if there's not a widow. Or that maybe the Kaddish itself is not a problem. That even if worried about a widow, there's not a problem with Kaddish. The Ramban Ibn Ezra talks about not being allowed to eulogize. Because for the fact of eulogizing, when they'll say explicitly this person is passed away, he's no longer alive, so that'll be a problem in terms of the wife. Or if she wears black as a widow, that'll be a problem because everybody will say, oh, she's a widow. Right, because her actions construe it that the person has definitely passed away. And that's why the Taz and the Shach speak about mourning, because they think that mourning is also an open and obvious proof that we are assuming the person has passed away. But none of that, says, proves anything about Kaddish. Because many people say Kaddish for lots of reasons. There are people who get paid to say Kaddish, but sometimes family members don't trust themselves to get the shul often enough to say Kaddish, and they will hire, a yeshiva bachar, or they'll pay, an old age home, I think some people used to do it. But they'll find people who are confident they'll get the shul all the time, and they're going to say Kaddish, and they'll pay them for it. Some people say Kaddish for a different relative, right? You'll see somebody saying Kaddish, you're saying Kaddish for my wife's grandfather passed away, and there are no sons who are going to say Kaddish. I said I'd say Kaddish for them. So it says, so the saying of Kaddish is no proof that about who one's saying it, and about any of these situations. So there's no reason, he thinks, that we would jump from that to say that maybe the widow can remarry. That is a matter of debate among the Achronim as well. The Shus Yaakov, the Ba'er Hetiv and Eben Ezra, according to Shus Yaakov, would disagree. He thought that even if there are no other Avelim and no other mourners in the room, and in the Shus Yaakov's time, hundreds of years ago, only one person at a time said Kaddish. So you'd have two questions. One is, can person A say Kaddish? And question two is, does person A have priority over person B? So when the Shus Yaakov wants to say that these people shouldn't say Kaddish, he says they shouldn't say Kaddish not only when there are other Avelim, other mourners, because they can't take away their Kaddish, but even more so, even if there are no other mourners, you shouldn't say Kaddish. So he clearly holds that Kaddish is a problem in terms of these issues. But the Elif Lamateh disagreed. And he said he thinks that the person wants to say Kaddish, and he's hoping to in some way produce, part of what happens with Kaddish, we think, is that it produces some kind of benefit for the deceased. So if you have a son, his father's disappeared, and he wants to be able to say Kaddish for the father, so we shouldn't stop him. Because, especially since we're only going to allow it in a place where there are no avelim, no mourners. Since there are no other mourners, nobody comes to say, oh, he must be a mourner, because whenever there are mourners, we don't have this son say Kaddish. So if that's true, the Al-Flamateh says, there's no reason to worry that we're going to jump from there to the conclusion that the widow, the woman, the wife, who we assume is a widow, really, but we don't halakhically assume she's a widow, there's no reason to assume that we'll jump from Kaddish to letting her. Because the truth is, it's the opposite. Since as soon as there's other mourners there, we don't, then everyone will know the situation, and therefore, since everyone knows the situation, we won't have a worry. And the Gilyan Maharsha there says he can also even be the chazan in such situations, because, again, being the chazan is no proof of anything. And Shukneset Yecheskel says that even if the Shulchan Aruch says we don't allow them to mourn, the Knesset Yecheskel said, but I allow them to say Kaddish, and I allow them to make a minyan in their house to say Kaddish. So why would making a minyan in their house help? Because it makes it more well known that this isn't real Avelus and it's not real Kaddish. It's the family members want to say Kaddish. And I also allow them, he says, to wear big day chol on Shabbos, to wear weekday clothing on Shabbos. So today, the gap between weekday clothing and Shabbos clothing for some people is very large. For some people, it's very small. Whole sets of discussions about it. But in times of the Shulchan Aruch, So you might have a special garment for Shabbos, but it looked very, very much the same. It would be like today. Those people wear suits all week. And then on Shabbos, have a special Shabbos suit. So it'd be like that, wearing your weekday suit on Shabbos. So this Knesset Yecheskel would allow them to do that as sort of a somewhat kind of a mourning, but not to wear mourning clothing. So therefore, from all these sources, Tzvi Kluk concludes, as we will we, with a couple of practical pieces of advice. First, the hope that this doesn't happen ever again. But sadly, since it does happen sometimes, if the person who disappeared has no wife, then the children or other relatives can establish a yard site whenever they want, as far as the day that they think it's most likely the person passed away. They can treat it as a yard site. They can say Kaddish on that yard site, and they can observe it completely as a yard site, even if there is a wife slash widow, and we haven't found the person, so that we're worried about her remarrying on the basis of what we're doing. If they make some kind of a clear sign, such as saying Kaddish only when there are where there are no other mourners in the room. So that's a complicated custom today, because we today have multiple people saying Kaddish at a time. So, but the Tzvi Ezra says if they only say it when there are other mourners, or they make a special minyan in their house, if they want to be able to say Kaddish and things like that, so then they would also be allowed to, because that would be clear, that would make clear that there's a situation here that needs more attention than just, oh, they're saying Kaddish, the person must have passed away. And when there are other Avelim, so then we're not going to let them say Kaddish, then he won't say Kaddish, the mourner's Kaddishes, but then he can daven, he can lead the service, he can be the chazan, because that's always allowed. Lots of people are chazanim. And then when he's saying Kaddish in the course of being chazan, he can be mechavein, he can intend to for the memory of the deceased. And then finally, if it's almost certain that the person has passed away, like Mayim Kein Lahem Sof, water that has no end to it, but we're almost completely positive, person passed away, even though the wife can't get remarried, the widow can't get remarried, you can make a yard site, as we've done before, you can say Kaddish, in the ways that we've done. So we can hope that we never again have these situations, but these are some practical guidelines about the difference between allowing a woman to remarry, which we strive very hard to do, but has a higher burden of proof, and saying Kaddish or observing a yard site, which has a lower one. This is the Tzitzit Ezra's view of these situations, and that's our responsive day for the 7th of Tishrei. Have a great day.